This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, I think we have slowed down, so I'm going to call the meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. We'll begin with roll call. And Andrea, are you ready for that?
I am.
Thank you.
Ellen Mittman. Myself, Andrea Hanlon, I'm here. Brandon Fortenberry.
Here.
Brenda Fisher. Brian Goodell.
I'm present.
Deborah Howell.
Here.
Derek Barrett.
Here. Here.
Ellen Miller.
Here. Derek is here, by the way.
Okay. Hey DePue.
Present.
Jackie Kirky.
I'm here.
Yeah. I thought I saw you. Jamie Duong.
Here.
Jessica Townley. I see Jessica Withers is here. Joe Canella. Michelle Aparco. Kate Supran. Kit Tannenbaum.
Here.
Christy Mahoney.
Hello.
Lisa Zacharias.
Here.
Marcus Brooks.
Here.
Marcy Benda. Marin Cherry. Michelle Pudlick.
Here.
Stacy Coyle. And am I forgetting anybody?
I'm sorry, I just jumped on Zoom.
Jessica Townley is here. Okay, great. Thank you. Back to you, Jessica.
Thanks, Andrea. I'll read the land acknowledgement next. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Goyokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right, thanks for being here, everyone. I just want to remind you the meeting's being recorded, and there is live transcription. And our first item up for today is approval of the October 6th minutes. So do I hear any motions for amendments, changes, motions to approve? EA members can raise their hand in the reactions feature, and Ellen will be helping me monitor that as we go along. Oh, Ellen, your hand is up.
Sure, I will move to approve the minutes.
We have a motion to approve. I see Michelle Podolik, your hand is up.
Oh. I will second.
Thank you. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, by unanimous consent, the October 6th minutes are approved. And our next item is, we have a guest presenter today, Gordon L. Varger, Senior Director from Benefit Services and Administration. We'll be doing an open enrollment presentation. He does this, I think, annually, just ahead of open enrollment, and we always appreciate it. So, Gordon, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. So just a
a little bit of ground rules, if I could. You are seeing information that has not been made public yet. So you, the EA, is part of my feedback routine before we actually announce things to the public. So I'm going to share a deck with you today. That's how we got to where we are and our proposals and what we're going forward with. Obviously, nothing is final until we publish it. So we will be, you'll see the communication plan in the last slide. But I would ask that while this is an open forum, that you please honor that this has not been announced to the public yet. And we really have our own way of communicating these things out. So I would ask that this be for our discussion and communication today and not for publication at this time. I'll tell you when it's going to be published, but I really appreciate your partnership in that. So let me share my screen. And I just want to make sure, are you seeing full slide or are you seeing the slides on the next slides?
It's like full slide? One full slide, one full
Perfect.
Slide.
Great, thank you very much. So I promise that I'm going to make this as light and airy as possible, but I'm a benefits nerd and there's a lot of stuff here that I will either go through quickly or spend as much time as you'd like. So I want to start with retired, we're talking just endowed benefits today. The contract college option transfer period normally kicks off in December, and that's largely done outside of our control. So Cornell doesn't control costs or plan design in those plans. We administer the plans for the state. What we do control are the endowed side. And while we try to make things as comparable as possible today, we're just talking about endowed. And we're going to talk for a moment first about endowed retirees. So we have a large population of retirees who are in one of three or four different retiree plans, and we'll talk about those first. And again, I'm going to share some facts so it's clear how we got to certain items. So we're going to start with the pre-65 retiree plan. So endowed faculty and staff at Cornell have the ability to leave as early as age 55 with 10 years of service. And until they become 65 or Medicare eligible, they fall into one plan. It's the retiree pre-Medicare plan, retiree pre-65 plan. We have about 841 individuals in that plan right now. It is self-insured, which means that we control the finances of it. We don't control all the medical determinations. We use Aetna as our vendor to do this for us. Our arrangement in our retiree coverage, for the most part, is that Cornell will pick up 90% of the premium, and we share 10% paid by retirees, so very similar to our active structure. What we found in looking back at 2021 and 2020, we do a two-year look back, is Cornell's expenses on this plan, or the overall expenses on this plan, have grown pretty much with nationwide trend. Trend is anywhere from 5 to 7%, and we're coming in right at 7% for this particular plan. Small population, 841 people, self-insured, which means that claims get paid out of this plan, and the risk and the future risk is determined by where those claims were the last 2 years and where we think medical trend in those claims will go in the future. So as we faced a 7% increase in the cost of this plan, we, as we have done in prior years, have to share that cost with our pre-65 retirees. Again, at the rate of they pay about 10% of the total cost. So with an increase for 2022 in this group, what we're seeing from dollars, because dollars are a little more clear than a percentage, we're going to see the cost go up for pre-65 retirees with individual contracts. They'll go up $5 a month, $60 a year. Or if they're in a family contract, it's going up $26 a month. For family contracts, for actives and for retirees, Cornell pays 75% of the family cost, and 25% is with the retiree or active. So 10% responsibility for individuals, 25% for family. So we're seeing a slight cost increase of 5 and 26. Now, this plan has had some good years, so we haven't had an increase every year. Last year, we were able to keep it flat, but we do have to go up going into 2022. And this plan, just as a reminder, is full comprehensive medical coverage, along with an Optum prescription drug card very similar to what we have on the active side. When we look at our post 65 retirees, we actually have three plans. One is frozen, and then we have two choices for current retirees. The frozen plan is an old medical supplement plan. It supplements Medicare. There are about 94 retirees left in that. That plan will keep operating until we don't have any remaining retirees in the plan. How is that for a nice way of saying it? When we don't have any remaining retirees in the plan, that plan will go away. This year, that plan had actually very good experience for the last 2 years, so that plan, those retirees won't see a rate increase. The other two active plans, the 80-20 plan and the Medicare Advantage Prescription Drug Plan, the MAPD, is where our current retirees choose to go at retirement. And here we're talking about retirees who are age 65 or older or Medicare eligible for other reasons. The majority of our retirees fall into the 80-20 plan, which for those EA members who've been here for a while, Cornell used to have an 80-20 plan for its active faculty and staff. And it's basically, the name implies, the plan's going to pay 80% of costs and 20% are going to be the responsibility of the retiree. Medicare Advantage is a recently added plan. I say recent in Cornell terms, of 6 years ago or so. And the MAPD plan is kind of an encapsulated plan, Medicare, medical, prescription, all in one plan, whereas the 80-20 plan relies on Medicare A and B, the 80-20 plan, and the Optum drug card that these retirees receive. So for the 80-20 plan, with a large group of retirees, self-insured, looking at utilization the last 2 years, actually really good utilization under that plan. So we do not have to pass on a rate increase for that plan in 2022. So the majority of our retirees, 80-20 plan, MedSup, no cost increase going into 2022. The Medicare Advantage plan, with about 850 retirees, has shown an experience that's around 4.6%. There's also always a health insurance fee we have to consider. Health insurance fee was waived for next year by Congress, but we do have to look at that 4.6% increase. We share it in the same formula, 10% for individual retirees, 25% for family. And so MAPD for the second year in a row will have increases of $1 a month for individuals and $6 a month for families. We wish we never had to pass on increases, but we do have to cost share for this. And so for that particular group, the 842 people, they will have a slight increase in premiums in 2022. Moving at record-breaking speed, that's what I have to share on retirees. I know everyone's anxious about actives, so again, you're seeing this first. Our active endowed health insurance, looking back at the last year and building in the year before also, surprisingly, despite COVID, there was a lot of utilization in this plan. And we saw utilization, unfortunately, with a higher number of high-cost claimants, people who had expenses over $250,000 in a year. And so when you have higher high-cost claimants with a self-insured plan like ours and a volume, a headcount like ours, high-cost claimants really impact the cost of the plan. So very comprehensive coverage through the CPHL, the Cornell Program for Healthy Living, the high-deductible health plan with an HSA, and the Weill Cornell Medical Plan. Our trend is basically a 7% trend. And again, right at the top of what we're seeing across the nation, but it does mean that we got to share some costs with our active faculty and staff. Now, we've been able to get a lot of great rebates and discounts on our Optum prescription drug program. Cornell participates in a coalition, a preferred university RX coalition of about 42 colleges and universities. So working together, we have some buying power. We get some good rebates and discounts. I was lucky enough to be part of the creation of this when I was at Columbia in 2001. It was Columbia, Cornell, and Boston University who created this coalition with three schools, and we're now up to 42 with some considerable negotiating and buying power. So we can really get discounts established across our prescription drug plan. Even with that, though, healthcare costs grew. And so when we're looking at this kind of a growth, we do have to share some costs. The good news is we're not sharing the full 7% with faculty and staff. I was able to receive agreement through the president and the cabinet that we're going to just share a 2% growth for faculty and staff, which means Cornell's costs are going to go up by about 8.1%. So when we add that 2% growth, when again, I like to look at dollars rather than percentages, that tiny print at the bottom will show that we have four tiers of coverage: individual, individual plus child or children, individual plus spouse or family units, which is two adults and at least one child. We're CPHL, where 6,200 of our faculty and staff are. We will see increases ranging from $1 to $9 a month. It will be coming out pre-tax, though. So again, that's reducing taxes at the level that you're currently paying. The high deductible health plan, because more of the expenses paid out of the plan, the premiums are only going up $1 to $6. And the very small enrolled Weill Cornell medical plan, unfortunately, is very expensive to operate, and that one has to go up from $2 to $13. So you will see in the communications that we talk about for open enrollment, we don't focus on costs are going up 2%, because 2% is a very deceptive figure. People confuse that 2% with a 2% SIP. They're not the same bases at all. So a 2% increase, again, for CPHL, it's 2% of the 10% of the cost that you're paying, so the 1 to 9. Other endowed plans, if we talk about our dental and vision, you might recall we rolled out new dental and vision plans in 2020, pre-COVID. We had good news before the world really changed on its axis. MetLife Dental, we offer two different plans, a standard plan and a dental plus plan. You'll see some enrollments. We have clearly a larger enrollment base in the standard plan with 1,300 employee onlys, 500 employee and spouse, 200 employee and children, and 750 families. That particular plan is slated to go up 4% cost share across the board. This is employee pay all. And what we've done here is shown you the 2021 rates and the 2022 rates. So the range of increase in the standard plan on the far right column runs from about $1 a month to $3.42 a month. Again, these are coming out pre-tax. The Dental Plus plan, the richer plan, when we apply the same kind of 4% increase, it's about $1.70 a month to $5.41 a month, depending on level of coverage. The dental plan is fully insured, which means we purchased this product. The risk all resides on MetLife. And again, despite what we were hearing about people not necessarily being able to get to dentists through part of 2020, when they did get to dentists, the cost shot way up. This was a richer plan we rolled out in 2020 than we had before, and the utilization is showing that to be the case. We did negotiate caps for MetLife, so they could not increase more than 4% in this year, and they can't increase more than 5% next year. Those were our initial negotiated rates. We're hoping we won't see the 5% next year, but it comes down to utilization, how many people use the plan in the following year. On the vision side, we negotiated a rate hold for 4 years when we rolled out the Davis Vision. And so this year, again, no increases. So we won't see increases. Earliest would be 2024. And again, pretty high enrollments in consideration, over 3,100 people in the vision plan. It did show that that was a necessary plan in when we're looking at the total population of eligibles. We did go out to look at whether or not we had the best choices, the best opportunities in our, what I call our protection benefits, things like basic life insurance, group universal life insurance, personal accident insurance, and long-term disability. What we found when we went out to bid, we worked with 8 major vendors to see how they would work with Cornell's experience and our population. In the end, our incumbent carrier, Cigna, which has just recently been acquired by New York Life, they had the best performance, the best commitments, the best guarantees, and the best pricing. So we did renew with Cigna at New York Life for 2022. What that does mean for us, the basic life insurance policy where Cornell pays the basic life insurance premiums for all endowed and contract college faculty and staff, they were able to give us a rate pass. So that's one area where overall fringe costs won't go up. On the individual voluntary policies through the Guaranteed Universal Life, the GUL policies, these policies are individual contracts between our active folks and our retiree folks and Cigna, now New York Life. Those contracts have not had an increase in a number of years. The risk has gotten higher, and so we did have to accept an increase on those group universal life policies. PAI stayed the same. So if you have a group universal life policy, you'll be getting an individualized letter from Cigna, New York Life, talking about what your options are. If you continue to carry the current policy, what the cost increase will be, or give you options if you wanted to reduce overall coverage to keep to the same premium. On the long-term disability side, again, not the best news for Cornell. We are seeing an uptick in people who qualify for long-term disability. And so we're getting more cases of people who are unable to work in their own positions or in any positions into the foreseeable future. So our claims, our experience has been high now going on 3 years. We are experiencing, without an increase the last few years, we are going to experience an increase of about 13.5% on these premiums. For our endowed faculty and staff, Cornell picks up that premium. Our arrangement with the state on the contract college side is they would pick up, they pick up 85% of the costs of this plan. So we will see about $120,000 spread across contract college as an increase in rates. I can't tell you what it will be for every person because it's based on salary that's protected. But we will see both an increased cost for Cornell for endowed and a contract college staff increased cost. One of the last things that I normally talk about is what we know about the future for health savings accounts and flexible spending accounts. I have some news and lack of news in the other area. So on health savings accounts for 2022, those individuals in a high deductible health plan with a health savings account, the good news is the contribution limits were increased for 2022. So if you're an individual, you can contribute a total of $3,650 in 2022. And if you're under a family HSA, you can contribute up to $7,300 in 2022. And just as a reminder, because many of you may not be in a high deductible health plan HSA, Cornell puts forth each year $1,000 into that HSA for anyone enrolled in the high deductible health plan HSA. So those limits that I've mentioned there, those limits include $1,000 from Cornell. Unfortunately, with everything going on with flexible spending accounts, Congress has not approved the flexible spending account limits for 2022. We haven't seen them yet. We've run into this before where we've had to go into open enrollment without knowing those limits. We do have a lot of pundits out on the web pages and internet who want to tell us what they're going to be. But until we actually see it from the IRS, we can't roll it out, which means that you'll see in the open enrollment kits that we're keeping to the current 2021 limits for right now on both medical care, dependent care, and rollover amounts. So unfortunately, what we'll have to do is do a second run as soon as those are announced and ask people if they want to adjust their contributions for 2022. Under the COVID provisions that are currently in place in 2021, you've been able to change your medical FSA, dependent care FSA, as your needs have changed. That is not slated to continue into 2022. So it will be important. We'll put it in the open enrollment information. You'll need to make your annual elections during open enrollment We don't have the flexibility of letting you change these throughout the year unless you have a life status change. So I covered a lot of ground. How am I going to cover it for the general population? So we are expecting that next Monday, we will have everything locked and in place, and there will be an email going out from me to all benefits eligible faculty and staff. It's going to look similar to prior years. This is a markup. It's going to be a very colorful email about endowed open enrollment, what's changing, what the choices are. It's going to tell people you've got a 1 week notice because the 25th is 1 week before open enrollment starts, and we'll refer people out to our web pages where there's going to be guides and resources and a lot more information. Endowed open enrollment will run from November 1st through November 24th, so closing in the afternoon on the 24th right before our break. And basically on November 1st, everyone will get an additional reminder through Workday that your open enrollment event is now there and available for you to use. Around November 4th or November 5th, people should receive postcards at their home addresses, which is particularly slated to drop later as another reminder, a week in, that open enrollment has started and that you've got a couple more weeks to process. And then during the week of November 8th through the 12th, instead of having in-person benefiters again this year, as we had to bypass last year, we're going to do virtual benefiters, which means over 4 days, and there will be an announcement of all the presentations. Various vendors and partners will be doing Zoom presentations that will be repeated twice during the week about various benefit plans, again, kind of helping people to get more information about plans that they might be considering during open enrollment. Big deadline, November 24th at 4 p.m. We will need to bring open enrollment down in Workday so that we have then the final week of November, early December to process everything, get information out to our vendors so ID cards and things can be produced before January 1. So it says slide 8 of 8, so as much as I'd love to keep talking, I think I've come to the end of my presentation, but happy to answer any questions you have. Let me just open up.
Thank you, Gordon.
Sorry, there's a question on dual eligibility. Dual eligibility always exists. We don't ever actually announce the rates here, but yes, that will still exist, and those will be in the open enrollment charts.
Thanks, Gordon. So I'm going to open this up to questions, comments. Members, you can raise your hand in the chat, raise your hand in the reactions. Ellen will be helping me again, just in case. And Gordon, I want to thank you for an informative and thorough presentation, as always. I'm glad to hear that Benefair will be happening again virtually. It's always helpful.
No swag this year, unfortunately. I can't give you anything to take home virtually, but...
There's a question in the chat that came in before Kit raised her hand. Will the presentations for the virtual Benefair be recorded, Gordon?
Yes, they will. So what you'll see in the open enrollment announcement, we're encouraging the live attendance, and so we'll be recording them through that week of the 8th to the 12th, and then we have pretty quick turnaround with our communications team, so they'll all be out on our open enrollment website to watch after the 12th.
Sorry, Kit, was that your question? Your hand was
My question was pointing to the question in the chat.
Thank you. Other questions for Gordon, Ellen?
I do have a couple questions if no one else has anything to ask. When you first started your presentation, you had mentioned that on the retiree plan for the under 65, that Cornell pays 90% of the cost and individuals pay 10% of the cost. Is there a breakdown as far as the active plan, as far as how much of the cost Cornell is covering versus how much the employee is covering?
That's actually also the model for active. That's where we got it. So active and retiree, our goal is to share 10% and 90%. I'm going to be completely open and honest. I know this is being recorded, but this was not for the press. We're actually paying more than that right now because over the years, we have not passed on the costs. So, for example, last year, we didn't pass on any increased costs to faculty and staff. And so we're actually taking on more of that burden. And at some point, technically, we'll need to get back to a true 90-10 and 75-25. And I see there was another question. I'll just check down to that because I see it in the questions from Brian. So the post 65 plans, so I want to make sure there's no confusion. The 80-20 plan is how the plan operates. So within the plan, you get 80% reimbursement for expenses and you pay 20%. The cost share is the same 90-10. So we're only sharing 10% of the premium on those plans, but the plan design is 80% reimbursement within the plan.
Okay. Kit was next.
Yes, I'm looking at another question in the chat. It says, were the trends on the medical prescription plans for retirees and active calculated over a blended two-year period, referring to fiscal year 20 and 21?
They're actually calendar year plans. So everything in healthcare is calendar year. And so our renewals are calendar year too. So yes, they go back 2 full years. And we take in special considerations about COVID being an anomaly. So certain months of COVID, we're looking at full basis points of where they could have been.
Jamie?
Yep. I have a non-healthcare plan. So if there's other healthcare plans, I'll defer and come back at the end. But I figure since we have you here with us, I have another question I wanted to ask. So
okay.
Let's circle back then, Jamie. Lisa, did you have a question?
I do. So thank you. So at the beginning, Gordon, and thank you so much for this presentation. Very helpful. At the very beginning, you were saying about the under 65. You said you can retire at 55, and how many years of service did you say?
10 years of service, 55.
10 years of service. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Gina?
I have a question just as a regular staff person, having nothing to do with my role. I was sort of compelled by one of the statistics was the high cost claimants continue to grow. They've risen 18% in the last 5 years. And related just to support for our colleagues and our community, is there something the assembly can do or that we as a community of colleagues can do to support wellness? I don't know if that, it seems going back 5 years, that trend isn't necessarily COVID related, but that it continues to rise was the phrasing that I found a little alarming.
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting, and we could talk about this a lot, but what we're seeing, and I'll be totally blunt, we have an aging demographic. We have always had longer term, slightly older median or average age faculty and staff. And we have some regional issues here too. We talk about this with our colleagues in Syracuse and RIT and what's happening to us in the region. We have a very particular growth rate on various types of diseases. And so as we look at those, we look at our plan and how they cover them. What we can't always foresee, though, is when there's going to be anomalies, which is very often what these high-cost claims are. Heart transplants, lung transplants, really elaborate or very detailed cancer treatments. Those are the things that, Gina, to your point, yes, I would love it if we could institute wellness programs today that would have or get people into programs today that are going to have an immediate impact on them. Unfortunately, a lot of the genetics has happened already, and so what we've inherited in our tendencies or our behavioral attitudes or actions up to this point have an impact on what's going to ultimately happen in our health. So we try to move that needle, and certainly colleagues in wellness and work life and all the things that we're trying to do do help, but we will unfortunately always have claims where there will be lost limbs, there will be accidents, there will be brain injuries. We have a musculoskeletal, this whole region of New York State has higher musculoskeletal issues than anywhere else in our immediate next door neighbors. And so we see it across institutions. While we don't talk about individual claims, we talk about trends very often. I talk to Ivy Plus schools, so looking at similar, you know, hiring pattern locations, we're facing a lot of the same trends. And some of it, a more educated, as it were, population doesn't necessarily mean a population that takes better care of themselves throughout their lives. And so we do have the opportunity to give more messages, but some of the groundwork's been laid, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Sure.
Gordon, I know you had a time commitment here, so I don't want to go beyond. I know Ellen has her hand up and Kit, but do let us know if you need to head out.
Okay. I can be here a little bit longer until you're ready to kick me out. I don't want to miss, there were things about vision care. I don't know if people would like me to go back to those for a moment.
Yeah, there's a couple things in the chat. I had one question in relation to the long-term disability numbers that you gave. There's the 13.5% premium increase, and you said that that's based on, like, the number of cases. Does that mean that we have a 13.5% increase in cases, or no, those are not equivalent?
No. So long-term care, although we basically self-insure it in a way, is still an insured product. And so there's risk that gets established based on what's happening with a population. So we look at the total people covered under this insurance and then the number of claims that go against it. And so when we look at those claims, and again, we look at the kinds of situations that lead to long-term care or long-term disability, I'll be honest with you, I don't hold a job well, so I've been at six other universities in my career. But over those time periods, what's interesting is Cornell actually has more long-term disability cases than I've seen at my other universities. So again, not sure if that's the nature of the illnesses that we're having that are taking us out. We're also a very big population. So if we think about, you know, 12,000, 13,000 benefits eligible, long-term disability cases are growing, not to the level of people who use health care, but certainly to the level of supporting someone for the rest of their lives, which is what LTD really is. So again, I guess actuarially, if we think about what happens, if I have an LTD participant who goes out in their 30s or 40s, we've got to calculate what that expense is going to be for us for the rest of their lives. And so when we look at who's there and what is it going to cost us and then what's going to add to it each year, that's what drives our costs up. So we have ongoing costs for people who are out there now and the projections of who's going to go in the next year or the next couple of years. And so that's what drives this risk pool up, if that's helpful.
Yes, thank you. Kit?
excuse me. I was looking at the chat, and I know, Gordon, you had made a nod to some of the comments in here about the vision plan. And I guess to go in chronological order with everything else that's come in, if you could address those.
Sure. So I think the first one is about the vision plan change and that only certain brands of contacts would be covered. So we do have two different levels of coverage. So I just want to make sure I'm not sure what the limitation is that you're experiencing on contacts. This is actually an improvement over the Emeritus coverage that we had. It may not be where we'd like to be in the end. But if you'd like, Allison, you put your name out there. If you want to contact me separately, let's talk through what you're experiencing because I just want to make sure I understand what the limitation is that you're having. And then Michelle, the limitation on glasses. So let's talk about where you're finding that limit, if you wouldn't mind reaching out to me separately. Vision plans they're not going to be perfect and they're not going to cover it all. So usually vision plans work with FSA plans, but we did try to make an effort to really improve it over where it was with Emeritus.
I think. Kit, do you want to continue with the online, with the comments in the chat, or should we circle back to Jamie since he did have a question earlier? Jessica, I don't know what you want to do.
I think I'd like to circle back to Jamie so that we can wrap up and let Gordon go and move on with our agenda.
Thanks. Gordon, thanks for being here. I was just wondering if your office has any more plans to continue looking at how to make whole the retirement deductions that were contributions that were taken from staff during the pandemic in light of the recent announcement of like the $3 billion endowment increase. It just feels like salt in the wound that the amount returned was far less than the amount taken. And I'm just wondering if your office is continuing to look at how to make that whole.
It's a very good question, Jamie. I will tell you this is way above my office. And so the concept of needing to get to savings and now being able to give some of that back is coming from the various highest level of the institution. I'm not privy to all the conversations on what else might happen in the short-term future. One of the things that we've had to be very, very careful of is we can't equate this dollar amount to the plan. So our plan, our retirement plan, CURP, was modified and has to be consistently applied. So it was modified to a 3% contribution from August until December. We modified it again to go back to 10% in January. With all of the auditing, all of the observation and checking that happens in these qualified retirement plans, we have to be very careful to say we're not returning exactly what was lost, because basically that would be an employer contribution towards your retirement outside of the plan. And so one of the reasons why, you know, it's not going to be exact for anyone, whether it's that or it's the contract college salary reduction, they had to get to a point to be consistently and apply a rule that they could give money back. It can't be tied to what was actually lost. It's just one of those things within the retirement plan operations. If we did that, then we'd have to put it into the plan, consider it a plan contribution, and that's just not doable. So I don't know if that's helpful, but the give back, I will be honest with you, I learned about it shortly before we had to initiate it. It was wonderful news, but it's not through the plan.
Okay, thanks. We'll keep looking for who to talk to about that then.
Okay.
Thank you, Gordon. I do want to wrap it up. Kit, did you have a very quick comment?
Yeah, I wanted to bring this to the floor, going off of this what just was discussed, since I don't think I'll be able to stay from full time. I don't feel that we talked about this on the executive committee. I don't think the messaging was very clear about that, that stipend or whatever money that was returned to us. And I just wanted to highlight to the assembly that employees do have the option to self-service on workday to go in to put in the amount of contribution that they desire to be added to their retirement for that applicable paycheck, and then change it after that, once that pay has happened, if that makes sense. So it seems, I think the messaging comes off that it's a tax for endowed, that it's a tax $1,250 stipend, but if you employees do in fact have the option to go on into workday and have it go into their retirement, they just have to manually do so.
If that's a really good point, and I would just add one more thing just to tie it back to what I just said. So the CURP plan is the CURP plan. The CURP plan is only Cornell money, and so you don't ever put contributions there, and that was the plan that was changed for a cost savings. What you've mentioned is really, really important, and that is that you can make a choice individually to put more money into your own TDA plan, which is only your contributions. So it helps you to get potentially additional tax deferral, but it doesn't put it back into the CURP plan. Again, our big thing is to separate this from the CURP plan. This is almost like a bonus the university is giving that's flat taxed. And so you can potentially defer some taxation by putting it into the TDA.
Thank you. Thank you, Kip. All right, well, we'll let Gordon go. Thank you once again for coming to us for our annual presentation. It's always very helpful.
Thank you, and look forward to your open enrollment mailings. You'll hear from me way too much in the next month, but hopefully it'll be helpful. Thank you.
All right, we will move on to business of the day. We had postponed our EA Resolution 2, support for the interim policy 6.3 until today, and I see that Michelle Laparco is with us. So, Michelle, do you want to say anything, and we will, as we open it up?
Sure. Sorry I wasn't able to attend the full meeting the last time that 6.3 was discussed. I think some folks may have had some questions or concerns as to why it was including staff, but I'm not getting any emails, and I have a meeting tomorrow with our stakeholder group. So I want to say, please email me if you have concerns with this, because if I don't hear concerns, my report to the stakeholder group is going to be very, very, very short. And I want to be sure that I'm encompassing everyone's concerns. And I think the only thing that was shared with me was, you know, why were staff being included? And if whoever made the comment wanted to elaborate, I'm happy to take us offline and I can include it in the report. But, you know, it's great for people to at least express their concerns or support to me and to the group so that we have everybody's voice heard.
Thanks. I think if my memory is correct, I think the concern was, or the question was, why having to add this line for staff when the member felt it was already covered by saying that staff in position of authority over students could not have relations. Those relationships were banned. So I think that was the distinction that was under discussion last time we talked about this. But if that member does want to speak up, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I'm happy to say it again. It was just that it doesn't seem that this policy changes or solves anything that the other existing policies don't already address. Those kind of issues of power imbalances and all those kind of things that exist. There's plenty of policy in Cornell on how that works. And I just think that this is extra, you know, red tape and stuff. I don't think it's the university's business to have people filing relationship reports on, you know, who they're dating and whatever. Unless there's an issue like power imbalances and those kind of other things. But I just don't see what the point of this policy is. It's not, faculty and staff are not the same thing. Like faculty, there's a whole different element to that doesn't apply to staff, broadly speaking. So it just seems unnecessary.
That is an excellent point. But what was pointed out to me is our associate deans and deans, and again, they're in positions of power, which I agree are covered, but it may not be clear to some folks that they fall under staff. And so that may be the intention of just making it a more balanced wording that all staff, regardless of their position. But I have the meeting tomorrow with the stakeholders, Jamie, and I'm happy to bring this up to them. I'm sure you're not the only person that thinks what you think about that policy. So I will bring it up. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle and Jamie. Thanks for clarifying. So the floor is open for discussion, and I do see your hand up there, Joe. Go ahead.
Jamie, what the policy does do is it offers a level of parallelism between faculty and staff. I know we're separate entities, but staff, especially student-facing, student-serving staff, could leverage the power they have over students inappropriately. So I see this as a welcome addition to our policies, I think, for the good of the goose, for the good of the gander. So respectfully, I'll play devil's advocate on that one.
Yeah, I just haven't heard a situation that isn't covered by existing policy.
So. Student goes to a department and asks for a permission number to add a class that's already full. And the registrar says, I will if you ... a quid pro quo.
That's covered by other policy. I mean, that's covered by other issues, other, you know, HR 300 covers that. That's already covered.
All right.
Okay. I see more hands up. Brandon?
I was just going to convey two things. One, that the student assembly passed a resolution in support of this policy on September 23rd. So from the student assembly perspective, there was a strong advocacy of the policy moving from interim to a permanent change, because there are requirements that it be interim for a period of time. And I think that the area of concern that Jamie speaks to, I see that in our dining operations, where students are there to work and at times are approached with romantic intentions by staff members and have been put into very uncomfortable situations. And so many staff setting that tone and expectation that working side by side with a staff member where these staff members have no power or authority over that student, but the fact that they are in situations where, you know, a staff member could make advances and that's fine, and there's nothing against this, and the student feels uncomfortable about it, doesn't know how to address it and put into a challenging situation. I think those are items that are addressed with this change, and that it no longer has to be specifically a supervisor or somebody with authority, but that the idea is that a student is coming here to work, and they're not coming to be in a romantic relationship. And the many students, we have thousands of students that are in employment alongside staff members, and addressing that, I think, is really beneficial and provides a clarity for that process, in my opinion.
And then Michelle?
I want to just point out another way of looking at this is it's a sort of a safe measure for staff as well, and okay. You don't want to be caught into a situation where, you know, someone is wrongfully accusing you of overstepping a bound, and this policy is in place not just to protect our students, but also I think our staff as well. It may not seem like it, but you know, if you're not disclosing the relationship, but someone accuses you of a relationship, you can just say, you know, you have some sort of ground to stand on and say, this is not true. You know what I mean? The other thing is we've talked about is that the disclosure is the responsibility of the person who's in the position of power as well. So if you, it would be tough if there's, you know, it gets gray. You're absolutely right. It does. It would get gray, but it definitely. I think looking at it as a way from another angle would be just to, you know, it's to protect everyone's interests. You know, we want to work here and we don't want to be accused, and students want to come here and learn and not have to be harassed. So, maybe that's another way of looking at it.
But, Michelle, Jamie,
yeah,
I hope. Oh. Go ahead.
I hope that, you know, the university has a very strong view on harassment, and I hope that not only the student dining employees, but I hope that other staff dining employees are also protected from harassment of other staff trying to date them. And so this policy doesn't address that. If you have staff that are making unwanted advances to student employees, they may be making unwanted advances to staff employees as well, and that's an issue to solve, not to create this blanket policy over. I think that, you know, again, these are like this blanket policy is trying to fix these little areas where we already have existing policy that should be addressing those issues. And my understanding is that the student assembly just saw it as such an uncommon thing that it really didn't matter to them because it's so rare, which is fine, but it's not like they had a strong, they didn't, from what I heard, it wasn't like a very strong, you know, we need this because of these issues. It was that it's no issue. It's not a problem to do it because they're so rare.
Do we have further comments or any motions?
Just one thing is that this did arise out of a situation. So I think in an abundance of caution, we tend to sort of swing all the way to the let's protect everyone mode. So
thank you. Any motions or further debate? Brandon, your hand is up.
I believe at this point I can call the question. Is that correct?
I think so.
I would motion to call the question.
And so I believe that is a motion to vote on the resolution. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Joe. So Lisa, as our parliamentarian, is going to be helping with the voting here. So we are voting on the resolution 2, support for interim policy 6.3. Those in favor, please click the yes green button in the reactions panel.
This is the vote on calling the question, right?
I think we are voting on the resolution.
We are voting on the resolution.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Lisa, do you have the yeses recorded?
If you go to the participants tab, yes, we'll show the totals at the bottom.
Oh, at the bottom, I counted them all. Thanks.
And then we'll go, thank you. And then we'll go to the no. If you vote no, it's the red X.
Oh, I don't. There's not a count at the bottom, though. Hmm.
It might be a host setting.
Maybe you can see that.
Anyways, it was 13 yeses.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hang on. Sorry. Okay. So
that's okay. Thank you.
Well, it looks to me like it's a tie. Yeah. Okay.
So
now I see.
The green X are yeses. The red X's are no's.
I got you. Okay. So now I have it. Okay. Awesome. Okay. So it's 14 yes to 2.
And then we will clear those. And if there's any abstentions, and I will be abstaining. Anyone else can do the green check if you are abstaining.
And Jessica, are you required to abstain?
I don't think I have to, but I am by rule for myself.
Oh, okay.
So Lisa, did you get a final count there?
Yep, so we have 1.
Okay, so I think the resolution, as I counted it, or as I heard, was passed 14-2 to 1.
Yes.
I think there was 2 abstentions, Jessica and Brian, correct?
Yes, but she didn't record it. Yeah. Yep. She just
said it. I didn't. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
All right. Thanks for your help with that, Lisa. Thank you, everyone.
Yes.
Next up, we have another liaison appointment, and I think he is with us, Nick. We had a staff member volunteer to be the employee liaison to the University Assembly's Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. Do we have any other volunteers for that committee? I had not heard of any. And seeing none, Nick, can you briefly tell us about yourself and why you're interested, and then we will do a vote on?
Sure. So my name is Nick. I actually was a student at Cornell. I graduated a few months ago, and I'm now a project manager for Student Campus Life. So I kind of just wanted to, I'm in Student Campus Life and the construction, so I like campus planning and infrastructure and that kind of stuff, and I'm pretty familiar with the campus and wanted to stay involved even as a staff member. So.
Thank you, Nick. Assembly members, any questions for Nick or any nominations? Not sure. Gina, he's not a member, so I don't think he can self-nominate. Do you need one of us to nominate him?
Yes.
Thanks. Brian, your hand is up.
I will nominate Nick for that position.
Thank you. So we have a nomination. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Brandon. And any opposition? We will go by unanimous consent as we have for other liaison positions. I'm not seeing any, so thank you, Nick. You are our employee liaison to the University Assembly Campus Committee on Infrastructure, Technology, and the Environment. Really appreciate that. And just a reminder to members and the guests here, we are still looking for employees on the Codes and Judicial Committee 1 and Campus Welfare and Committee 1 employee there. Let me know if you hear of anyone.
Nick, thank you for your service that you're going to be putting in.
All right, 118. We are up to committee reports. Andrea, are you here to, I'm sure you're still here, to give the executive committee update?
Yes, I'm still here. I think our big sort of announcement, I think some people have heard, we do have a confirmed time for the president's address to staff. It will be November 12th. It's a Friday from 12 to 1. We'll be a hybrid, meaning in person at Biotech G10, but also on Zoom for anyone who doesn't want to be there in remote. There will be nothing served before, but as a grab and go afterwards, there'll be apples, cookies, both vegan and gluten-free options, as well as bottled water for people to take on their way out for that if you are able and would like to attend in person.
Andrea, I'm sorry, can you repeat the time? I got the 12.
12 to 1.
Thank you.
Yep. That's a confirmation, right, exec committee?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, I just saw something from Wendy that was like, oh, TBD. And I'm like, I just wanted to confirm it's 12 to 1. So we'll have President Pollack as well as Mary Opperman there in person delivering the address if folks would like to be there in person. You certainly are welcome. We're looking forward to seeing people. Of course, all protocols needed with masks, et cetera. So that's something that's taken a bit of coordination, trying to make sure that that's set and then making sure that we're appropriate in terms of not serving food, but having food available afterwards as a grab and go. That's been the sort of the bulk work of the stuff that we've been working on for the last couple of weeks. I have no other update unless I'm forgetting something from exec.
Thanks, Andrea. So any questions for Andrea or exec? And I'll just remind members to put to use the raise hand feature and reactions. Thank you. We will move on to Yes, I will. There is also the president will be visiting, doing, she goes to each assembly, I think once a year or every semester, and she will be visiting the employee assembly at our November 17th meeting.
Given the time, the difference between of that, we'll certainly talk about format and questions submitted in advance and those types of things, probably at the couple of meeting, or the meeting before that, which is November 3rd.
Joe, did you have a question?
I was just going to ask Brandon if he was going to have the ice cream sandwiches that he promised at a prior meeting.
I'm never going to live that ice cream down, am I?
No.
No. No ice cream there.
Okay.
Okay, we will move on to Communications, Outreach, and Recognition Committee. Ellen, do you have a update?
I do. I have a few announcements, a couple of call to actions. So first, I would just like to invite all EA members to use Teams. I know not everyone is on Teams yet, but we're finding it a really helpful tool to communicate between meetings. And I have added all of the Employee Assembly members to our Teams channel, so everyone is in there and everyone has access. And if we need quick feedback on something, it's an easy way for us to post and to get, you know, feedback and comments from people. And we haven't noticed a lot of action in there so far. So I would just like to invite everyone to please consider using Teams. So that's my first one. And then up next, I have, EA Appreciation Award, the Employee Assembly Appreciation Award, is given every year at the President's Address to Staff. So we will need to have a winner to present at the November 12th address. And I did send out a call for nominations with a Qualtrics link that I hope that everyone received. And if you didn't receive it, please let me know, because that's a problem. I didn't receive any nominations yet. And so we need to get on that. I mean, it's really important that the Employee Assembly is showing appreciation to our colleagues around the campus, and especially, you know, the last couple of years that we've been having, there's so many units on campus that have gone above and beyond and really shined. So please think about the constituents that you represent. Think about the services that you use on campus, the places that you visit, the colleagues that you interact with. And I'd really appreciate if you could submit the nominations through the Qualtrics survey by October 29th. That's our deadline to have the nominations in, so that everyone will have a chance to review them for a couple of days and vote, so that we have time to get it all prepped for the president's address. My next call to action is the employee appreciation event that HR puts on once per semester. The fall appreciation event will be happening in person on October 29th. It's next Friday, the 29th. It's a much scaled back event, but is open to all staff, and you get a free ticket to the football game, and the HR will have a welcome table where they'll be handing out free giveaways to all to everyone that attends. And they have asked for some Employee Assembly volunteers to help with manning that table, handing away giveaways, greeting people. So I would like to help. It's being handled by Ashley Miller in Human Resources, and I would like to get some names over to her of people that would be interested in volunteering. She also made a special exception for us to allow us to have some materials on the table that promote the Employee Assembly, so your presence there will help also direct people to that and say, look, it's, you know, we're the Employee Assembly. So that would be really, really helpful. So that's October 29th. So if you're interested, please let me know, and I'll put you in touch with Ashley Miller. Or if you have contact with Ashley, please reach out to her directly. then we, as Andrea mentioned, our next like thing for outreach that we're working on is the president's address to staff, and we will need volunteers for that as well. So I'll put out a call for that a little bit closer to the event. And the communications team will be working with the exec committee and the OA office to work on promotional emails, materials, and whatnot, and get the volunteers together and make sure we have a clean run of show for that. And lastly, I think our next EA Voice newsletter is targeted for November 8th. So if anyone has any content they'd like to have included in that, please let us know. Other than that, I think that's it for me for today. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen. So I'll open it up for questions. And Christine, your hand was up. Thank you. Andrea?
Ellen, did you want to talk about the red shirts, the EA shirts that are available?
Yeah, I didn't do the prep work I was going to do on that, which is a count of what we haven't thought. But yes, for anyone that is going to be volunteering at one of these in-person events, I will hopefully have a shirt on hand that will fit you. We have Employee Assembly red polo shirts. And if you don't have one already, if you weren't previously on the Employee Assembly, I will get one to you if we have your size in stock. If we don't have your size in stock, we may not be able to get that to you prior to these two upcoming events, but we will I will be contacting all Employee Assembly members in the near future about shirt sizes if you don't have them already, so we can place an order for those of you that need them.
Thank you. I do want to point out it's 1:28 and we have other committees to get to. Marcy, I don't think is here, so there's wouldn't be an update from the education committee, but do I have a motion or a very quick update from elections or any motion to extend or adjourn?
Nothing much to update, just that voting is today, ends at 2:00. So just remind people to go ahead and vote.
Thank you, Jamie.
Can I say one quick thing about the appreciation award? There was a comment in the chat about, well, I nominated this group last year, so I'm not going to nominate them again. Please, if you nominated a group last year and they didn't win, there's no harm in nominating them again. If in the past year they've still gone above and beyond, please nominate them again, because we have no nominees and, you know, there's so many great groups. So it doesn't hurt to resubmit that from last year if they were not a winner.
So thank you. I will actually go back to them for that. The reason why I didn't nominate them this year is because I went to the College Staff Council with this award recently, and we do have a group that is going to be nominated. However, I was very happy to nominate them last year, and if you guys feel like it's okay, I'd be willing to do too.
All right, Brian, your hand is up.
Yeah, I'm moving. We extend the meeting for 10 minutes, please.
There is a motion to extend the meeting for 10 minutes, seconded by Joe.
Second.
Thank you. I don't see, is there any dissent? Don't see any, so we have 10 more minutes. Thank you. We had a lot to get through today. Yes, the Education Committee, I think Mercy said, the first meeting for tomorrow. So were there any questions or comments for Jamie and the Elections Committee, or continuing comments or questions for Communications? Ellen, your hand is up.
I don't have the agenda in front of me, so I don't know what else we need to get to. But if there's time, I know there are a couple of candidates here in our meeting today that are running on the election. I don't know if they want to introduce themselves, but if we don't have time, I understand.
Well, we have 9 minutes, and
I can call you out. I see Adrian. I see Ellie. I don't know. Maybe that's it. I don't remember everyone's name that was in the
in the ballot, but.
Thanks to our guest for being here.
Hello.
Sure. Hi, Adrian.
Much appreciated. Thanks, folks.
And Annette, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. All right.
I just want to thank all of the candidates who did run this year, and I just want to thank everybody for taking part in the election. I should have said that earlier, and I forgot. So thanks, everybody, for taking part in the election, and thanks, everybody, who helped set up the election.
And I should have thanked you, Jamie, for trying to fit everything in today. I do acknowledge I am rushing a bit. I am going to try to get a couple of liaison reports in since we have 8 minutes now. Brandon, did you want to give an update on University Assembly?
I had to leave a little bit early last night, so in light of time, we're kind of short. I'll save it for the next one.
Thank you. I can say, can I say anything about, we were looking at a resolution and I can't really say anything, sorry. My brain is all on EA business right now. Jackie, did you have an update on the Faculty Senate?
I can give a really brief one. We've met a few times this year. We met last week. They're doing a hybrid format, which is interesting to see how that goes. They've been discussing very heatedly the chat feature in the meeting, since a lot of the people mostly are in Zoom instead of in person. So there's a lot of discussion about that, which will continue in the future. And other things that are slightly relevant, we had discussion about the consensual relationship policy. And there was a lot of stuff related to faculty titles and groups. There's a global development hub that's being opened up.
Sorry, what was the hub?
Global Development?
Yes, thank
you. Sure. Global Hubs Program is what it's called.
Thank you. Thanks for that update. Any questions for Jackie beyond? Fine. Any other liaisons here that have updates? I don't know if any other committees have met recently. Brian, your hand is up.
Yeah, the Welfare Committee met today. And then BBC is due to meet next on the 26th. I do have some news to share. I'm excited about gaining a liaison position at our meetings from a member of OHR Labor. Labor Relations, the Compliance Office, or the Benefits Specialist. One of them will be joining us every meeting to act as a liaison fashion, which I'm excited to that it's going to happen. So that's kind of what's happening with the BPC.
Thank you. And yes, as a reminder, we had mentioned this several times in previous meetings that we were going to break up the committee reports in order to fit more liaison reports and open discussion into our meetings. And that happened today, and I should have mentioned it when I moved us into committee reports. Christy, we have 5 minutes. Do you want to give an update on the Welfare Committee, since you just put a link in our chat?
Sure. Three quick things. One is in the chat, I have a link to the Restorative Talking Circles. It's a new program offering from CUHR and Wellness. Very interesting approach to building campus community around resilience and reflection. Secondly, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Jessica shared with you all information and resources. Brian and Joe are using some of those. Tomorrow is Go Purple Day. Typically, the AA is very active in supporting the month, so encourage you all to check out those resources. And lastly, in November, you will be seeing from the Welfare Committee a resolution we're working on now about encouraging the development of a culture of inclusion for our employee community with disabilities, whether they're obvious or non-obvious. So we will be passing that again through our committee the next meeting and then bringing it forward to you.
Thank you. Any questions for Christy in the Welfare Committee? Brian in the BPC? Brian, your hand is still up. I think it's just up. Thanks.
My bad.
Yes, and one more reminder to vote, everyone. I will admit that I almost forgot to do it. I quickly voted this morning as soon as I remembered to do so. All right.
What was Michelle Loparco had a question in the chat. Oh. I don't know if she's still here. Are you still here, Michelle?
Yes. When do we get notifications about appointments to campus committees? I believe the Office of Assemblies notifies committees. Gina left. I don't know if Wendy can answer that.
I'm still here.
Thank you. Can you answer that?
What is the question again? Sorry.
When do liaisons get notification about, or do they get connected to their appointments to other campus committees?
From what I can tell from the other assemblies, they have actually just been reaching, if it's a liaison to an external committee, they've just been reaching out to that committee to say, just information, this person has been appointed as a liaison to your committee. If it's something that is within, like for the Nick just got appointed to that, so that will just be me working with the VP of Ops for the UA to let him know that that's been staffed. Does that answer the question, I hope?
I will. I'll circle back to this, and maybe I need to send a few emails to link people with committees. Thanks for asking that, Michelle. That's always fairly unclear to me, too. Thank you for answering, Wendy. So we have 2 minutes left, so we'll open to discussion or to motions to adjourn or extend. Ellen?
I will move to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Thank you, Joe. And any dissent? We will, by unanimous consent, adjourn. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for staying extra. Thank you, guests, for joining us.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.